He was telling me jokes, Jared said. He said that most soldiers don't think special forces have a sense of humor.
Most soldiers don't know anything about the special forces, Brahi said.
Listen, Durak, don't do that again. You're just adding fuel to their prejudices. When real-born soldiers say special forces don't have a sense of humor, it's their way of insulting us, suggesting we're less human than they are. If we don't have a sense of humor, we're like every other subhuman automaton humanity has made up to amuse itself. Just another emotionless robot for them to feel superior to. Don't give them a chance to do that.
After Brahi's rant was unpacked by his brain pal, Jared thought back to his talk with Cloud. He didn't sense that Cloud was suggesting he was superior to Jared. But Jared also had to admit he was only a couple of hours old. There were a lot of things he could be missing. Still, Jared felt a dissonance between what Brahi was saying and his own experience, small though it might be. He ventured a question.
"Do special forces have a sense of humor?" he asked.
"Of course we do, Durak," said Brahi, glancing back briefly. "Every human has a sense of humor. We just don't have their sense of humor. Tell me one of your pilot's jokes."
"All right," Jared said, and repeated the Sherlock Holmes joke.
"See now, that's just stupid," Brahi said, as if Watson wouldn't know that the tent was missing. "This is the problem with real-born humor. It's predicated on the notion that someone's an idiot. There's no shame in not having that sense of humor."
Brahi radiated a sense of irritation. Jared decided not to carry the topic of conversation further. Instead, Jared asked, "Is everyone here special forces?"
"They are," Brahi said. "Camp Carson is one of only two training sites for special forces, and the only training base of any kind on Phoenix. See how the camp is ringed by forest?"
Brahi motioned with his head to the edge of the camp, where Earth-derived trees and native Phoenix megaflora competed for supremacy.
"We're more than 600 clicks from civilization in any direction."
"Why?"
Jared asked, remembering Brahi's earlier comment about the real-born.
"Are they trying to keep us away from everybody else?"
"They're trying to keep everybody else away from us," Brahi said.
"Special forces training isn't like training for real-born. We don't need the distraction of regular CDF or civilians, and they might misinterpret what they see here. It's best if we're left alone to do what we do and to do our training in peace."
"I understand I am behind in my training," Jared said.
"Not in your training," Brahi said. "In your integration. We begin training tomorrow. But your integration is as important. You can't train if you're not integrated."
"How do I integrate?" Jared asked.
"First you meet your training mates," Brahi said, and stopped at the door of a small barracks.
"Here we are. I've told them you're here. They're waiting for you."
Brahi opened the door to let Jared in. The barracks were sparsely furnished, and like every barracks for the last few centuries. Two rows of 8 beds lined the sides of the barracks. In and among them, 15 men and women sat and stood, eyes focused on Jared. He felt overwhelmed by the sudden attention. His brain pal unpacked the concept of shy. He felt the urge to say hello to his training mates and was suddenly aware that he wasn't sure how to speak to more than one person through his brain pal. Near simultaneously, he realized that he could just open his mouth and speak. The complexities of communication confounded him.
"Hello," he said, finally.
Some of his future training mates smiled at his primitive form of communication. None of them returned the salutation.
"I don't think I'm off to a good start," Jared sent to Brahi.
"They're waiting to say their introductions after you've integrated," Brahi said.
"When do I do that?" Jared asked.
"Now,"
Brahi said, and integrated Jared with his training mates. Jared had about a tenth of a second of mild surprise as his brain pal informed him that as his superior officer, Brahi had limited access to his brain pal, and then that datum was superseded by the fact that suddenly there were 15 other people in Jared's head, and he was in the heads of 15 other people. An uncontrolled bolt of information seared through Jared's consciousness as 15 life stories poured into him and his own meager store of experiences branched into 15 pipelines. Salutations and introductions were unnecessary and superfluous, In an instant, Jared knew and felt everything he would need to know about these 15 strangers, who were now as intimately part of him as any human could be with another human. It was a mercy that each of these lives was unnaturally short. Jared collapsed.
"That was interesting," Jared heard someone say.
Almost instantaneously, he recognized the comment as coming from Brian Michelson, even though he had never communicated with him before.
"I hope he's not planning to make a habit out of that," another voice said.
Steve Seaborg.
"Give him a break," said a third voice. "He was born without being integrated. There's a lot to handle all of a sudden. Come on, let's get him up off the floor."
Sarah Pauling. Jared opened his eyes. Pauling was kneeling down next to him. Brahe and his other training mates formed a curious semicircle above him.
"I'm fine,"
Jared sent to all of them, keying his response to the squad-wide communication channel, which included Brahe. The choice to do this came naturally, part of the info dump of the integration.
"I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how to handle it, but I'm fine now."
From his training mates radiated emotions like auras, each different. Concern, confusion, irritation, indifference, amusement. Jared followed the amused emotion back to its source. Pauling's amusement was visible not only as an emotional aura, but from the quirky smile on her face.
"Well, you don't seem all that much worse for wear," Pauling said.
She stood up and then extended her hand.
"Up you go," she said.
Jared reached up, took her hand, and pulled himself up.
"Sarah's got a pet," Seaborg said.
And there was a ripple of amusement among some of the squad, and a strange emotional ping that Jared suddenly recognized as a form of laughter.
"Shut up, Steve," Pauling said. "You hardly know what a pet is."
"Doesn't make him less of one," Seaborg said.
"Doesn't make you less of a jerk," Pauling said.
"I'm not a pet," Jared said.
And suddenly all eyes turned to him. He found it less intimidating than the first time, now that he had all of them in his head. He focused his attention on Seaborg.
"Sarah was simply being kind to me. It doesn't make me a pet. It doesn't make her my master. It just means she was nice enough to help me off the floor."
Seaborg audibly snorted and then removed himself from the semicircle, intently finding something else to be interested in. A few others broke off to join him. Sarah turned to Brahe.
"Does this happen with every training squad?" she asked.
Brahe smiled.
"Did you think being inside each other's heads would make it easier for you to get along? There's no place to hide. What's really surprising is that one of you hasn't taken a punch at someone else yet. Usually by this time I have to pry a couple of trainees apart with a crowbar."
Brahe turned to Jared.
"You going to be all right?"
"I think so," Jared said. "I need a little time to sort everything out. I have a lot in my head, and I'm trying to figure out where it all goes."
Brahe looked back over to Pauling.
"You think you can help him sort it out?"
Pauling smiled.
"Sure,"
she said.
"You've got Dirac watch, then,"
Brahe said.
"We start training tomorrow. See if you can get him up to speed with everything before then."
Brahe walked off.
"I guess I really am your pet," Jared said.
A wash of amusement flowed off Pauling toward Jared.
"You're a funny man," she said.
"You're the second person to tell me that today," Jared said.
"Yeah?"
Pauling said.
"Know any good jokes?"
Jared told Pauling the one about Sherlock Holmes. She laughed out loud. Chapter 5 Training for Special Forces soldiers takes 2 weeks. Gabriel Brahe began the training of Jared's squad, formerly the 8th Training Squad, by asking its members a question.
"What makes you different than other human beings?" he asked. "Raise your hand when you have the answer."
The squad, arrayed in a ragged semicircle in front of Brahe, was silent. Finally, Jared raised his hand.
"We're smarter, stronger, and faster than other humans," he said, remembering the words of Judy Curie. "Good guess," Brahe said, "but wrong. We are designed to be stronger, faster, and smarter than other humans, but we're that way as a consequence of what makes us different. What makes us different is that alone among humans we were born with a purpose, and that purpose is simple, to keep humans alive in this universe.
The members of the squad looked around at each other. Sarah Pauling raised her hand.
Other people helped to keep humans alive. We saw them on Phoenix Station on our way here.
But they weren't born for it, Brahe said. Those people you saw, the real born, are born without a plan. They're born because biology tells humans to make more humans, but it doesn't consider what to do with them after that. Real born go for years without the slightest clue what they're going to do with themselves. From what I understand, some of them never actually figure it out. They just walk through life in a daze and then fall into their graves at the end of it. Sad and inefficient. You may do many things in your life, but walk through it in a daze will not be one of them, Brahe continued. You are born to protect humanity, and you are designed for it. Everything in you, down to your genes, reflects that purpose. It's why you are stronger and faster and smarter than other humans.
Brahe nodded toward Jared.
And why you are born as adults, ready to fight quickly, effectively, and efficiently. It takes the Colonial Defense Forces 3 months to train real-born soldiers. We do the same training and more in 2 weeks.
Steve Seaborg raised his hand.
Why does it take the real-born so long to train? He asked.
Let me show you, Brahe said.
Today is the first day of training. Do you know how to stand at attention or other basic drill maneuvers?
The members of the training squad looked at Brahe blankly.
Right, Brahe said. Here come your instructions.
Jared sensed his brain flooding with new information. The perception of this knowledge sat thickly upon his consciousness, unorganized. Jared sensed his brain pal funneling the information into the right places, the now familiar unpacking process launching branching paths of information that connected with things that Jared, now a full day old, already knew. Now Jared knew the military protocols of parade drilling. But more than that came an unexpected emotion that arose natively in his own brain and was amplified and augmented by the integrated thoughts of his training squad. Their informal array in front of Brahe, with some standing, some sitting, and some leaning back on the steps of their barracks, felt wrong. Disrespectful. Shameful. 30 seconds later, they were in 4 orderly rows of 4, standing at attention. Brahe smiled.
You got it on the first try, he said. Parade rest.
The squad shifted into parade rest position, feet apart, hand behind backs.
Excellent, Brahe said. At ease.
The squad visibly relaxed.
If I told you how long it takes to train Realborn to do just that much, just as well as you did, you wouldn't believe me. Brahe said. Real-born need to drill, to repeat, to practice again and again to get things right, to learn to do the things that you will learn and absorb in 1 or 2 sessions.
Why don't the real-born train this way? Asked Alan Milliken.
They can't, Brahe said. They have old minds set in their ways. They have a hard enough time just learning to use a brain pal. If I'd tried sending them the drill protocols like I just sent to you, their brains simply couldn't handle it. And they can't integrate. They can't share information between themselves automatically like you do, and like all special forces do. They're not designed for it. They're not born to it.
We're superior, but there are real-born soldiers, Stephen Seaborg said.
Yes, Brahe said.
Special forces are less than 1% of the entire CDF fighting force.
If we're so good, why are there so few of us? Asked Seaborg.
Because the real-born are scared of us, Brahe said.
What?
Asked Seaborg.
They doubt us, Brahe said. They've bred us for the purpose of defending humanity, but they're not sure we're human enough. They've designed us to be superior soldiers, but they worry our design is flawed. So they see us as less than human and assign us the jobs they fear might make them less than human. They make just enough of us for those jobs, but no more than that. They don't trust us because they don't trust themselves.
Well, that's stupid, Seaborg said.
That's ironic, Sarah Pauling said.
It's both, Brahe said. Rationality is not one of humanity's strong points. It's hard to understand why they think that way,
Jared said. You're right, Brahe said, looking at Jared. And you've unintentionally hit on the racial flaw of the Special Forces. Real born have a hard time trusting the Special Forces, but Special Forces have a hard time understanding the real born. And it doesn't go away. I'm 11 years old.
A sharp pinging of amazement ricocheted through the squad. None of them could conceive of being that ancient.
And I swear to you, I still don't get the real born most of the time. Their sense of humor, which you and I have discussed, Dirac, is only the most obvious example of this. This is why, in addition to physical and mental conditioning, Special Forces training also includes specialized training into the history and culture of the real-born soldiers you will meet, so you can understand them and how they see us.